We are glad to make all of our JCast Network podcasts free for our listeners. However, they are not free to produce and host. Please consider making a donation to JCast Network to help support our work by visiting jcastnetwork.org/donate. Thanks for your support.
Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Finman. We've got a great show for you today. We're going to mix things up a little bit. Instead of the interview being first, the interview is going to be at the bottom of the hour. We are going to be interviewing David May, who is a research analyst for the Foundation of Defense Democracies. We're going to be talking about the Ben & Jerry boycott, and which is all over the Jewish media, but generally not out there. I guess people don't really care a whole lot about ice cream. So we've got music, wonderful music all the way, hand-picked. We've got a really, really awesome, like, klezmer song. Whoa. Anyway, the portion of the week, which we'll discuss this half hour, maybe the end of the show, towards the portion of Akev, which can be found in the portion of Deuteronomy. We have a pretty, pretty cool story all the way at the end. You want to stay all the way for that. But before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. Corona is back up in Israel. More than 1,000 cases a day were reported this week. Arabs threw rocks at a Jerusalem police hours before Jews were allowed to pray at the Temple Mount in honor of Tisha B'Av, which was last Sunday. Police quickly dispersed the crowd. The Arab town of Huwara in Samaria was the scene of two terrorist incidents. A rabbi's car was attacked. He escaped injury. And three teens escaped a lynch mob with little injury. Two rockets were fired from Lebanon towards Israeli territory. Air defense fighters intercepted one rocket. The second rocket exploded in an open field. The IDF arrested two people who had crossed into Israel from Lebanon, and they are being interrogated. Israel imposed a building freeze in Judea and Samaria following pressure from the Biden administration. And this story is going to warrant some more discussion. Maybe we'll see how this plays out. And finally, don't know if you were watching, for the first time ever, the Olympic Games held a moment of silence during the opening ceremony for the 11 Israeli athletes murdered during the Munich Olympics in 1972. And that's the news. Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. We're going to do some music now. This is Avram Fried. And I suppose everything Avram Fried does sounds good. But what he did in this instance is he took a legal document, a Hebrew legal document, which is used. It's called the Tanayim, which is sort of like a conditions of people getting married type of thing. It's very official. And usually it's signed and read just prior to the wedding ceremony. Nobody pays attention to it. But evidently, Avram Fried did because he made a song called Tanayim, The Wedding Agreements.
Hashem Yisborach Was a mazel toy. Hamagid made a shisacheris. Who ye tain shame toy? Who she eris? Lue let divreat know him. The haberis. Cheni. Pero te veis in you. Ein Schnee hat's doch dir. The shame will is if it is. Der Heino mit Zado. Chochom kadmoi, hayu mitzad hasheni, naloi, kineses yisru elikalo kiruvo, yibani yimo.
And that was Avram Fried. That was Tanoim. It's an amazing song. It really is. That somebody could do something to that. Anyway, up next, we promised something special for the klezmer section. We always, if I don't play something for klezmer, then people, they say, where was the klezmer song, Rabbi? So this is classic. This is Harry Kandel's orchestra, a recording taken from 1919. It's called The Freilicher Chassid, the Happy Student.
Thank you. Want assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale.
Herschel Fidman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. We have time for one more song. This artist is Adi Gabison, and the song is called L'chaim. Tell life, did he? No, it's not that. It's a different L'chaim.
מטוס שוב ממריא ואני כבר נוחת מלמעלה שמש בחלוני עוד תקופה שהייתה עכשיו נגמרה לה נשארתי כאן לבדי שמישהו יבוא ויסביר ויעיר יעשה פה קצת סדר נרגיש את הקצב ניקח קצת אוויר זה בוער אז בוא נרים את הכוס נעשה פה ביחד לחיים לחיים יש בת קול שאומרת חייך כי הכל פה זמני העולם קצת מסתיר והמציאות נעלמת נוסע בדמיוני מודה על דברים לא טובים שעשיתי התפזרתי יותר מדי עכשיו זה הזמן להודות שזכיתי זכיתי אז בוא נעלה לחיים לחיים נראה את האופן השיר לך עד השמיים לחיים לחיים
And that was Adi Gabison, and that was L'chaim. Hope you liked it. Portion, while we're getting waiting for our guest today, which will be David May, a research analyst for the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. We're going to be talking about the Ben and Jerry diverse boycott of selling it in the West Bank. And that's going to be after we get done with this monologue, hopefully. But the portion of Akev can be found in the chapter 7 and following in the book of Deuteronomy. And the portion continues Moshe's soliloquy on the mountain. Towards the end of the portion, Moshe introduces the second paragraph of the Shema. This is a focal point in the prayers
of every single Jew. We say it twice a day because it says in the first paragraph and the first paragraph when you're lying down and waking up. So that tells us that in the morning and in the evening, one must say the Shema. This paragraph of V'hayim Shema Tishmu talks about the importance of doing commandments. Which commandments? All the commandments. So we can ask then, what's the need for a paragraph to remind me to do all the commandments? And only that, but we make it a commandment to remind ourselves that we need to accept upon ourselves to do all of the commandments. It sounds like a redundancy repetition again. The each of each commandment has its own unique, or provides its own unique connection to the Almighty. The word mitzvah means to connect. It's a command. Yeah, we translate it as command. But when somebody commands you to do something, you've created a connection with the person. And when you don't do it, so you've broken the connection to that person who's commanding. So now, Moshe is saying at this point, it's a very interesting thing. He puts it in a negative. He doesn't say, listen, you'll do this thing, and this nice thing will happen, and this nice thing will happen, and this nice thing will happen. He says, if you don't do it, then, you know, it's... So, actually, it's V'haya Im Shemo. If you'll listen to the commandments, you'll get rain at its time. And then it says, but if you bow down to God, the wrong God, then God gets angry, etc., etc., etc. So we can look at this. And we can say that the word V'haya Im Shemo is not the word Im, is like crucial, because we've had this elsewhere in the line Im B'chukosai Talechu, which is, the word im is normally translated as if. But in certain places, it could be translated as when. So here also, so Moshe, when he's telling the people when you will, not if you will do, but when you will do, V'haya im shemoa, and when it will be that you will listen, etc. What Moshe is telling here is words of encouragement. We want, the Almighty wants to have a relationship with us. It is normal status quo for a Jew to want to have a relationship with God. It comes up, okay, so you can say, well, there are people who don't want a relationship with God. That's not really the essence of what a Jew is. The essence of a Jew, it says, it's a great, sounds very great in Yiddish. Niter kenen, niter vil zayn upturen fun elokus. A Jew, not he wants to, nor can he be separated from God. Whatever a Jew is doing, wherever a Jew might be, whatever their philosophy is, whatever their path is, whatever their beliefs are, whether they like it or not, the Almighty says, I want a relationship with you. So now, Judaism has always been an input-output religion. What you put into it is what you're going to get out of it. So we're going to have, you are going to have a relationship with the Almighty. The question is, what kind of relationship with the Almighty are you going to have? That, the Almighty says, totally, completely up to you. Whatever works for you, the Almighty's free and easy. You know, it's just, you know, the Almighty says you have your choices. You could do whatever you want. You have to live with your choices, but totally, completely up to you. You want to try to do things on your own? God says, go ahead, let me know how that plays out. So when it is then, like it says in the second paragraph of the Shema, that we say every day, twice a day, we're reminding ourselves, and Moshe has commanded us to remind ourselves that, yes, we want to absolutely have that connection with God. So now, where are we going to go with this? What's the bottom line? Judaism is very interesting in that I believe it's the only religion. Someone can correct me and send me a letter at rabbifinman.com and say, no, it's not like that, it's like this. But I believe that Judaism is the only religion that has a spectrum of correctness. It says that there's ways of, you know, like dealing with it. Like, for example, it says there's a prohibition. There's no commandment that a person has to grow a beard. There's a prohibition against shaving with a razor the hair on the face. So you have some people, like myself, that I don't put anything close to near my face. My beard has been growing since 1975, and Baruch Hashem, it hasn't grown a lot. That's just the way God wanted it. But there are other people who interpreted it differently. That's a don't shave. Well, if you take a scissors and you trim it, that's not shaving. Then there are other people who say, oh, a razor. Well, an electric razor or a depilatory isn't count as like this razor thing, which is a sharp blade that scratches the beard, the hair off your face. So the question then comes is, well, which one's right? The answer is, in Judaism, we say, they're all right. I chose that my relationship with Hashem in observing the prohibition of not shaving is that I don't touch the hair on the bottom of my face. Other people would like to interpret it differently. And that's 100% okay. Am I more religious than another? No, not at all. This person is observing within the parameters. And as long as the person stays within the parameters, they get an A+. And that's then is up to and totally and completely to the person who's wants to have this relationship with God. We are going to take a quick commercial break and we'll be right back. Don't go away. You're listening to the Jewish Hour.
Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurances accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
Okay, Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. We have online David May, who's a research analyst at the Foundation of the Defense of Democracies. And we're talking about the recent decision of Ben and Jerry's to boycott having business dealings with the West Bank or the Judea and Samaria occupied territories, whatever you would call it. How are you today, David?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, thank God. Okay, so first thing I want to know is, what is the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies and why do they care about Ben and Jerry's?
Sure. So we're a nonpartisan think tank based in Washington, D.C. We focus on foreign and defense policy. Our interest in Ben & Jerry's is because this is a larger picture of economic warfare. There's these activists that have convinced Ben & Jerry's to divest or to leave the West Bank. They're part of a campaign of economic warfare being waged against the state of Israel.
Okay, we apologize to Mr. May. He's having he's stuck in an airplane, believe it or not, as we're interviewing him. But as we say, the show must go on. Okay, so what led up to Ben and Jerry's deciding that they were not going to, no longer going to sell or participate in a boycott of the West Bank, Mr. May?
Sure. So the I guess the immediate preceding events were the Gaza war between Israel and Hamas in May. During the middle of the war, Ben and Jerry's, they released an advertisement for mint chocolate ice cream, and it received a flurry of negative feedback from different activists calling to boycott Israel, so on and so forth. Their board actually is led by an anti-Israel activist who she has on numerous occasions called for boycotting Israel. And so they actually took a two-month hiatus from social media to decide what they're going to do, and ultimately the board decided that they would boycott Israel.
Okay, so now, this story didn't get any play whatsoever in the mainstream media, but it blew up in all the Jewish media. It's like the only thing people have been talking about for like a week is about this story. So is this an important thing? The news didn't pick it up.
Sure. So maybe I'm just focused on it. So, you know, on my channels, it's been blowing up as well. I guess the big thing is it's not about Ben and Jerry's. This is about setting a precedent, different companies that might consider boycotting Israel, and if they don't get pushback, then other companies will determine that there's no negative ramifications for their decision to boycott Israel. But I think one thing that we've been seeing from several states is this looks to be a repeat of the Airbnb situation, where they came up with a decision to boycott Israel, and they were met with instantaneous and very fierce backlash.
Okay, you segued right into my next question. Is Airbnb did try a boycott of not listing properties in the West Bank, and the boycott lasted, I don't know, minute and a half, and Baduda, they just said, okay, well, we will. So what was the difference there to what's going on now, Mr. David May?
Sure. So I guess the big difference, this is just we have the benefit of hindsight. It's very similar to what happened with Airbnb. Airbnb made this decision. They got a lot of pushback, but another big element of what convinced Airbnb to undo their decision was a lot of the lawsuits, the anti-discrimination lawsuits that were filed against them in numerous cases in the U.S. and also in Israel.
Okay, something about not staying where you want to. We have this thing about fair housing, which is different than selling stuff. If you're joining us just now, our guest today is Mr. David May. He's a research analyst for the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. We are talking about the boycott by Ben and Jerry's of the West Bank of Israel. So the boycott is not of all of Israel, right? It's just the what's referred to as the West Bank's Judeo-Samaritan, the occupied territories, et cetera. So when usually people lump it all together, especially when they're talking about BDS, BDS is the entire Israel.
Sure. I mean, so BDS's ultimate aim is to destroy Israel, and a lot of these settlement-only boycotts, they're seen as an in-between. However, ultimately, they're still trying to.
What are you looking for? So you already said Saul?
I'm on the air. Ultimately, it's a step towards BDS. BDS's ultimate aim is to destroy Israel. So some people, some companies might determine that this is an in-between step and it wouldn't meet the criteria of boycotting Israel, but it still is.
Okay. So.
Where is that?
Okay, this is really cool. I've never actually interviewed anybody who was stuck in an airplane before, but it'd be better if you weren't near a two-year-old. But anyway, so Israel
What's been the reaction, first of all, from Israel, before we get to the grand picture?
So the reaction has been pretty fierce. It's reached the level of the prime minister and the ministerial level. They've been dealing with this. They called the CEO of Unilever actually trying. They called the CEO of Unilever to undo the decision. And actually in Israel, it's kind of ironic that it's the opposite situation whereas a lot of the communities in the United States and abroad are calling to boycott Ben & Jerry's. In Israel, they're actually calling to buy Ben & Jerry's because the Israeli licensee is the one who's getting attacked here, and he's the one who's going to be losing his license in about a year and a half.
Okay. Do you know anything about the infrastructure of Ben & Jerry's in Israel, Mr. May? How many people does it employ?
I'm not sure about the Ben & Jerry's in general, but the distributor that distributes it to the West Bank, he has declared that if they continue with their decision, he's going to have to let go about 10 Palestinian workers.
Okay, so it means that this it always seems to impress me that the BDS movement is really something that bites itself right in its own face. Never mind bites itself in the butt; just bites itself right on the nose. Here it is: they want to boycott, and yet Palestinians who they're trying to be in favor of are losing their jobs. And if they're selling in the West Bank, I'm assuming that not only are they selling in Carniel, but they're also selling in Ramallah. Would that be correct?
Yes, I'm not 100% sure on exactly the nature of how it gets sold in Ramallah, if it's through the Israeli distributor or possibly through a separate arrangement that they have.
Okay, but in the long term or even in the short term, the Palestinians are going to be hurt by this boycott. Would that be a safe assumption?
Yeah, I mean, it's a blunt tool. It's not making a distinction. It's just taking away, as far as the current wording of the Ben & Jerry's decision, it's going to completely take away all the ice cream, all the Ben & Jerry's from the West Bank.
Okay. Our guest today again is David May. He's a research analyst for the Foundation of Defense of Democracies. And we're talking about the boycott of Ben & Jerry's of the West Bank. And Mr. May, unfortunately, is stuck on a plane, and hence the background noise. But we're trying to work through it. And even though there is, of course, every plane has a two-year-old. So Ben & Jerry's is very unique. It's because Ben & Jerry's is no longer owned by Ben & Jerry. They, a long time ago, sold it to Unilever, which as soon as I thought Unilever, I said, oh, shampoo. Of course, that's what Unilever does. And this has got to affect the parent corporation. And how is it that Ben & Jerry's can do something against the people who actually own it?
Right. So they, Ben & Jerry's is known for their social activism. So they've spoken out on a few issues, mainly in U.S. domestic politics. But when they sold to Unilever in 2000, they had this clause saying that they would still be able to maintain some type of autonomy in terms of their social mission, in terms of advertising. But according to the documents that I saw recently, still, Unilever ultimately is the shot caller, but if they do decide to violate the terms of the allowing the Ben & Jerry's board to control the social mission, then they just have to up the royalty from 5% to 8% that they pay to Ben & Jerry's.
Oh, that's a very interesting arrangement. So there's a whole bunch of questions that come out of this now. So as Ben & Jerry's, do they sell in places like China and Cuba, Myanmar, or any other place where human rights violations are the norm?
So they have a few places where they sell that might be considered that. But the bigger issue when it comes to Unilever is the fact that Unilever is a multinational global entity. They source their products from many different areas, and one of the places that they source, they've been kind of dinged for is for getting tomato products from Xinjiang, the area in China that is where the Uyghurs live. And I believe the U.S. has stated that the sourcing of those tomato products amounts to slavery.
Okay, understood. So now, but I'm going to go back to the board of Ben and Jerry's. They specifically pinpointed the West Bank when there's a whole lot bigger fish to fry that they could say, you know, we're not going to sell any more in China. We're not going to sell any more in et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Generally, BDS, from the Jewish standpoint, is looked at as just blatant, not even latent, but blatant anti-Semitism. Would that be correct in this case, Mr. David May?
So the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance, they have their working definition of anti-Semitism, and one of the examples that they give is using double standards, judging Israel by a standard that you don't judge the rest of the countries in the world by. And it seems to meet the standard because whereas they've put out this statement on the West Bank and what they call the occupied Palestinian territories, they haven't made any type of statements or pronouncements on pretty much any other international dispute or any international human rights issues. They've focused it entirely on this one. So when you're only calling out Israel for a territorial dispute and not mentioning anything else, in fact, we just saw this week Turkey and northern Cyprus taking areas from what was the demilitarized zone in Cyprus in between, and northern Cyprus is being occupied by Turkey. And there's been no pronouncement. So this is part of a larger picture of one territorial dispute getting attention above all others.
Right. Understood. Okay. So now there is an anti-BDS movement in America. There are, to date, and we report on the Jewish Hour every time another state gets on board. Currently, there are 33 states that have anti-BDS legislation that ranges in things from we won't get into contractual agreements with any company that supports BDS. We will divest our portfolios of any stock of any company that implores BDS. So what's going on now around the country, Mr. David May?
Sure. So as you said, there's about 33 states with different anti-BDS measures. 12 of those have anti-investment measures, so they forbid their public state pensions from investing in companies that they deem to be engaged in BDS. And several of the others are about procurement, that they wouldn't be able to buy from companies that are engaged in BDS. So currently, 4 states have taken action so far. There was a letter from the Conference of Presidents of Major Jewish Organizations to urge their governors to take action. 4 states have already begun investigations, and there's several other local-level investigations going in, local boycotts that are being enacted. So it seems that whoever decided to make this divestment call on the Ben & Jerry's side, either they didn't anticipate the level of pushback that they would get, or they proceeded and determined that for whatever reason, they thought it would outweigh the losses they would take from continuing to sell to Jews in the West Bank.
Okay, very interesting. So what do you think, giving like the precedent that with Airbnb, for example, that their boycott, I don't remember how long their boycott lasted, but that's exactly why, is because it didn't last very long due to outside pressure. What do you think is going to be the prognosis then, Doctor, of the Ben & Jerry's boycott?
Yeah, so, I mean, Airbnb, they were approached by activists who presented a very one-sided picture of the issue, and Airbnb likely did not foresee it all, the backlash that they would face. It seems that in this case, a lot of the action actually came from within Ben & Jerry's, when you have the president of their board being a hardened anti-Israel activist, and also the outgoing president. He himself had traveled to the West Bank on an activist tour and has made other pronouncements calling for ending USAID to Israel. So this seems to have a little more, I guess, internal push So it might not be, they might not be as willing to completely backtrack because this is coming from within. But I think a lot of the pressure is going to come on Ben & Jerry's from Unilever, because Unilever ultimately is the responsible entity here, and they have global sales that they are concerned about, and they're less concerned about putting their claim in a dispute between Israel and the Palestinians.
Okay, that's going to do it. Mr. David May, I want to thank you so much. Again, our guest today was David May. He's a research analyst for the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, and I hope you continue to defend democracies and wish you all the best in all of your travels, wherever they may be.
Thank you very much, and thank you for bearing with me.
Okay, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. We all know there's an opiate epidemic, but Advanced Rapid Detox has a solution for people addicted to pain pills, heroin, and dependent on Suboxone and methadone. Advanced Rapid Detox performs detox under sedation in the hospital. Patients sleep through withdrawals and wake up without cravings. Dr. Julia Aronoff and the staff at Advanced Rapid Detox help people restore their lives and the lives of their families. Addiction affects everyone, even in the Jewish community, and Advanced Rapid Detox is there to help. Call 800-603-1813. That's 800-603-1813. Or visit them online at www.advancedrapiddetox.com.
Hi, this is Specs Howard. The Specs Howard School of Media Arts is proud to have been a sponsor of the Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding comes from its sponsors, listeners like you help keep the Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to the Jewish Hour, 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. That's 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. Your help is greatly appreciated. Thank you very much.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. Want to get in touch with me? Go to my website, rabbifinman.com, RABBIFINMAN.com. And there, right on the homepage, it bothers the heck of me when we go to, like, even, I mean, I wasn't going to say anything to him, but the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, I had to go to 4 different pages before I got to the defense, before I got to the contact page. It's like, if you don't want me to talk to you, you're an organization that's reaching out in public opinion. Okay, their business. But on RabbiFinman.com and also on JewishFerndale.com, the contact is right there at the top of the page. You don't even have to look. So you got something you want to make a comment, a question, a query, and a criticism, whatever it is that you have, send it off to RabbiFinman.com. What else is on RabbiFinman.com? We have archived editions of the radio show. You can go back and listen. I think it's 4.5 years worth of shows. It's a wonderful thing. There's also other ways in which I present Judaism in an entertaining and educational way and through various other media. There's also the donations page, which this month has already been paid for, so we don't have to talk about too much of that. You can go there, make a donation if you like. Check out RabbiFinman.com. The story involves a disciple of the Baal Shem Tov. He was a logging merchant, which was one of those things that Jews did. They would put in for bids to the various landowners through these great massive forests through Central Europe. And the way that they would do it is they would wait actually till the fall and winter. And during the fall and winter, when there were no leaves that they had to deal with, they would fell the trees and strip the branches and then take these massive logs and slide them down or float them down the river, as the case may be, if it was still earlier enough, to market down at the bottom of the bottom of the river, which was usually at the bottom of the river with some massive city where they dealt in the they dealt with the products of wood. So this logging merchant, whose name I do not know, had a son who was of marriageable age. And something very unusual happened. Whenever he would be introduced to a potential match,
he would faint. And this went on for like a long time. It's just like, they took him to doctors. What did they know? Doctors were talking in the 1750s. What do they know from doctors already? They had leeches, you know, put a leech on it, see if that doesn't make him faint. Yeah. They went to the Baal Shem Tov. The father went to the Baal Shem Tov and said, Baruch Hashem, his business is doing well. His family is in good health. It's just this one problem. He can't get his son married because every time he gets introduced to a girl, he faints. The Baal Shem Tov just looked at him and smiled and said, the one to whom he's supposed to marry, he will not faint. Keep looking. And that was that. So it happened one year that they got a good jump on the logging. And the locking business, it got all the stuff into the river. And then before they got the stuff down to the end of the river, it all froze. And he lost a lot of money because he couldn't get it to market. So he went to the Baal Shem Tov and said, what should I do? I lost all this money. The Baal Shem Tov said he should go around begging. So the Rebbe said that's what he did. It's not what he wanted to do. He was a businessman. So he went around begging. And he would knock on doors, and he would, at the end of the day, what would he do? He would go to the study hall, the synagogue, and he would sit and he would learn. He was a disciple of the Baal Shem Tov. He was a scholar. Somebody saw him sitting in a certain town, like in the edge of Poland someplace, saw him sitting and learning, and saw that he had come and knocked on his door before and had asked for money, and the guy gave him money. And he said to him, how much do you usually make in the course of a day? So he said, I make a ruble and a half, 2 rubles, that's what I make. So he said, listen, I'll pay you 2.5 rubles if you'll come and sit in my house and learn all day. The guy said, hey, thanks, that's terrific. So he sat and he was learning with he's learning there and it's going by. I don't know how long he went for. This landowner, I guess we could say, this Balabas, had a daughter of marriageable age. And something very unusual happened, that whenever she would be introduced to a young man, proposed match, he would faint. She would faint. So he thought this was very unusual, and he thought maybe something up of this. And he suggested to this person that he and his wife and his daughter should travel to the Baal Shem Tov to seek his advice. Now, this landowner was not a disciple. He didn't know from it. It's Poland. It's like the far end, the Hasidic. Finally, with enough, you know, if you say things loud enough and long enough, he finally said, okay, fine. I will travel to Mezhibuzh, which is in Ukraine. It wasn't a quick ride. The three of them together. In the meantime, this disciple traveled to Mezhibuzh first and told him what was up. And the Baal Shem Tov told him that he and his wife and his son should come to Mezhibuzh. When this man arrived with his daughter, so he asked, how did you make your money? So he said it was a very unusual thing. He was not very well-to-do. But suddenly, all of this lumber, these logs, just happened to fall like on his property when the thaw came, and he sold it for a great profit. Now he has money. So he called in the man and his son, who was standing there with his landowner and his daughter. And the Baal Shem Tov said, I want to introduce you, young man, to this young woman as a potential mate. And they took a look at each other, and they didn't faint. The Baal Shem Tov said, the wood which you have as part of your possession actually belonged to this man. But it's customary to provide a dowry, so you will provide a form of livelihood for your future son-in-law, and you'll all live happily ever after. That's going to do it for the show. We hope we had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope you had a chance to educate you just a bit. I strongly encourage every Jew to stop eating Ben & Jerry's ice cream. It goes along with my boycott way back when I had somebody on who suggested that they boycott Burger King because of their business in the West Bank, and I really got on the horn and said, yes, no Jew should eat Burger King, and it's for the same reason. We hope you have a great week. We hope to see you back again next week. Take care.
נשבענו על הכל עוד נתגבר עוד יבוא ימים טובים עלינו ונפתח את הלב נחבר בינינו כל מה שנשבר עוד נתקן נביא שלום בבית עוד יבוא ימים